Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the wind condition.
You know, spin a stick between his hands and make some fire, trying to get that spark.
And I'm not saying it's just menace, it really has the ability menace.
Drop the mic, wizards. You guys did a great job on the set.
Maybe with the 25th year of magic, they are going to come out and say, we have disbanded the reserve list.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
It's doing good tonight.
Excelente. So, man, there is a wealth of information to talk about right now. We've got preview season for not one, but two sets coming out. We've got stories that are definitely fun and worth talking about. First off, Greg, how's your week been going?
I don't know. I've been playing a lot of Magic. I picked up on something that I think might be a good pickup right now for you finance people, but I'll talk about that later.
Oh, really? I'll make a note right here. Talk about the cha-ching. Okay. Awesome. My week has been pretty consumed with having my second son. That's right. I have been waiting the approach of my second son. And on September 10th, 2 hours short of September 11th, thank goodness, my son Tate was born. And I've been very, very excited to be able to share him with, you know, family. Took a bunch of pictures, and he's awesome. Unfortunately, he's had a couple of complications with his breathing. He had to go to the neonatal intensive care unit, but he's receiving excellent treatment, and hopefully we will be able to bring him home with us on Saturday. But, you know, my wife is doing great. Everyone else is doing great, and it's been a lot of we just spent a lot of time.
So I just have a question. When he was born, did you win the game?
Yes.
Because okay, so you cast approach for the second son the second time.
The second son came, it resolved, I won the game. Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Good catch there. Yeah. But no, it's so amazing. All of you who have kids out there, I mean, you know, it's just, it's such a process. But anyway, I don't want to bore you all with that. But anyway, we're very excited about that. And now that, you know, we're able to kind of start moving forward, let's start talking about some amazing Magic cards.
Before that, we got story and we got a plug to go with.
I was going to say before that, we got to mention all these amazing Magic cards can be purchased at flipsidegaming.com. If you go to flipsidegaming.com, any order over $10, you may use the promotional code WINCONDITION in all caps to get 10% off your order. And that will help contribute to future giveaways that we have on this show. I know we gave away a Invocation Kefnet recently. That was exciting. And we look forward to doing more of these for you. So help us out. Go to flipsidegaming.com. Order yourself some boxes of Ixalan. Maybe some Iconic Masters.
If you have sweet, sweet Unstable boxes.
Oh, my God, I don't know if we'll get to that this episode, but there's already so much to talk about with Unstable. And if you haven't gotten the Commander decks yet, definitely go there and grab your Commander decks because they are sweet. So yeah, check out flipsidegaming.com, promo code WINCONDITION, save yourself 10%. And moving right along, Greg, where should we start this episode?
I don't know. I lost my memory. I can't remember anything.
Were you perhaps transported from one plane to another after engaging in, I won't even say combat, with a supreme being?
I mean, some might call him supreme.
Some may call him a
dirty old dragon.
That's a nice way of putting it. That's a very nice way. The trespasser himself, Nicol Bolas, has sent a character to a different plane without his memory.
Yeah. So the story starts, I don't know if you guys have read this, go read it if you haven't, or listen to it, with a person.
A man.
I don't know. We don't know that yet.
I think he looked inside his... Well, never mind. This is a G-rated podcast. PG-rated. Never mind. Continue.
So, this person wakes up in this growing, just this huge wealth of plants and greenery and blue skies and beautiful everything. And the first thing he's seeing is, how did I get here?
Who am I? And
or in the immortal words, who am I? Because if you like Jackie Chan, you'll know what that is. Yeah. Anyhow, so the first thing he notices is this strange bird-like creature coming through the forest to eat some eggs. And he looks at it and is like, what the heck is that?
This bird-like creature is a biped, you know, running around on two legs. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a dinosaur.
It is a dinosaur. And this man is a little confused as this creature does not really engage him in combat. It's mildly intrigued, but then it kind of moves on and just runs away. And he's like, where the heck am I? And what am I wearing?
What's this big blue cloak and this leather breastplate?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I really need these.
No, I mean, it's not like it's a severely cold climate where he's at. So he's like, you know what? I don't think I need this robe right now. So he sheds it. And immediately his survival instincts kick in. So he needs to figure out, you know, how to find food, how to find water, how to make a fire. And
remember, in all doing all this, he realizes that he's really weak.
Yeah, he's like, I don't really have any muscles. Like, how
what
am
the
I?
The heck was I doing? How was I fighting?
How am I supposed to survive as a weakling like this? Jeez, this cannot stand. So he goes about foraging for food and trying to make himself a fire and just exploring this island that he's on, trying to put pieces together. Now he gets
all the while he's getting these weird visions.
Right. And he doesn't know what to really make of them.
And some of them are like this elf with fathom, like deep green eyes, and a woman all clad in purple, and then another lady in yellow or blue and white armor, just telling him what the heck he should be doing with his day every day, day in, day out. And he thinks he's going insane. And in doing this, he tries to test different things. And he wills himself away from where he's at, his plane of existence. He tries to planeswalk away. Now, this is something we know about very well, but he does not. So he tries planeswalking away, and it's a very comfortable feeling, and he is jilted back to Ixalan.
And he doesn't know really what...
And then he gets this triangular sigil head above his face, and he's like, I don't know, I must be insane.
Yeah, he's like, I really have no idea what's going on. So, but a storm is coming, and he knows that once it gets cold and it gets, you know, once there's rain, that he's going to need to keep warm, so he's going to need fire. So he starts frantically trying to, you know, spin a stick between his hands and make some fire, trying to get that spark going. And he eventually just, he can't get it. He's like, I can't believe this is it. I'm the worst, whatever. But in his persistence, eventually he just consumes himself with his thought. He's like, I need fire. I need fire. I need fire. And eventually, as he's spinning, he looks down and he sees a spark. He sees smoke. He sees the makings of fire. And he's like, oh my gosh. Ah, Ah, this is amazing. I have fire. And so he looks at it and he's like, okay, all right, we've got fire going. Yes, this is awesome. And then so he decides, now I need food. I need, you know, to go get something to put on this fire so that I can actually feed myself. So he goes and he catches a fish and he brings it back and he tries to cook it. However, the fish doesn't really cook. In fact, it doesn't even get warm. And he's very confused. And he then notices that his fire doesn't produce any heat. In fact, he can move his hand right through the fire and notice that it's not really doing anything. And he gets super confused and then all of a sudden thinks, oh my God, you know what? I am going crazy. I'm hallucinating. This fire is just a figment of my imagination. But it seems so real.
And then he kind of figures out that he willed it into being and it was an illusion. And he comes up with this idea, well, maybe they can make something else. So he wills an illusionary draft horse into being. He's like, oh, I'm a mage. What the heck is that? And it's really funny because, you know, man finding out his memories. So he continues on with that and he decides, oh, wait, I'm not insane. So that means this is real. And maybe I should try doing that other thing that felt really nice again.
Yeah.
No, not that thing.
Stop it. He knows he's a man already. But, you know, maybe these visions are holding some water. Maybe they're actually going to help me understand, you know, who I am. And he sees this vision of a woman, and he starts to actually engage this woman in conversation. You know, and he's saying, you know, I don't know who I am. And this woman actually agrees with him. She goes, yeah, I know you don't know who you are. And I've been, you know, trying to help you figure that out. But, you know, you're locked. You're in your own little world over here. So and so he's all of a sudden embracing these illusions that he's seen now that he knows he's a wielder of magic. So he actually ends up conjuring up an image of himself too. He noticed, he's like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna try this crazy stuff, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, I can create an illusion of myself. I am an illusionist. I have magic. I am realizing that I am this cool person.
I mean, he thinks he's cool.
Well, yeah, he's the only one, but no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So after this, he makes an affirmation to himself to go out and explore, find out more about this world he's stuck on, to venture forth from his useless island.
He calls it a useless island. This is so funny. I mean, this is irony at its best. Oh my gosh. The man calling the island a useless island. We have no idea who this man is. I apologize. Go ahead.
So, I lost my train of thought.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, sorry. So he builds makes a his raft.
Yes.
Yeah. And he sets out into the ocean with his rations and everything he's got. And over some time, he comes across a giant storm. He ties himself into his raft, hoping to not, you know, get killed.
Right, and he puts his cloak back on for protection. Mm-hmm.
For protection. So he wakes up on some rocks, and as he opens up his eyes, he sees glistening white on the top of the rocks, and the first thing he thinks is, oh my god, it's snow! That's awesome! And then he takes a moment, he looks, and oh, it's bird crap. So he looks around where he's at, he sees nothing but rocks, he discerns that this island is much worse than the useless island, and goes back to sleep. So he wakes back up a day or so later, something, enough time for him to have gotten some rest, to the sound of a ship. He's greeted by a stone statue on the front of the keel of this ship, and the noises of the crew yelling man overboard, sending a boat out, the captain with a semi-feminine voice says, I'll go and look at this one myself. And He gets jarred awake, kind of, as he hears, "Bellerin, what the hell are you doing here?" Pardon my French. "And who are you working for?" And the first thing he sees is, "Well, this must be my name. This person doesn't look familiar to me."
This person with weird tendrils coming out of their head knows who I am. This is a good start in me figuring all this out.
And then Vraska says, "Wow, something really screwed you up, huh?" And that's where we left off on story one.
There you go. So we know that this man is, in fact, Jace Bellerin. And he's had his mind wiped from his encounter with Nicol Bolas. And so now Jace
His memories.
Is,
only his memories. He can still do things.
That's true. His memories, right. But this is Jace without any preconceived notions of who he is or even what he's supposed to do or what he's capable of. So he's learning himself all over again, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Right. So that ends the first story. The second story, we leap all the way over to a citizen who...
By the way, have you noticed that they have a full map that's up on Wizards' website?
They have a map of Ixalan?
Yeah.
What?
That's awesome. I saw it earlier today on somebody's Tumblr. But yeah, there's totally a map. If you haven't looked at this, it's probably a good idea to go check it out because it seems kind of cool.
And knowing Wizards, there may be a couple of cookies hidden in that map if you really want to do some research.
Probably.
So, yeah.
We jump over to the Sun Coast.
Yes.
With Huat Li.
Yes.
Who we come to find out wants to become the warrior poet. She's not one yet.
Right.
Riding atop her dinosaur, not dragon, dinosaur mount.
Right. All signs in her mind point to her becoming the warrior poet, which is a status that you ascend to. Only one person per generation can become the warrior poet. So our story begins with her returning to town with with her cousin, and she's hiding an item that she's actually taken from one of her most recent encounters, most definitely with a pirate crew.
No, it was a vampire crew.
Oh, bleh. Vampire crew! You're absolutely
right.
That's
why it was shoddily made.
That's
really cheap.
That's right. That's right. So she's walking into town. The crowds are parting. Her dinosaur that she has mounted is just running in a straight line, heading all the way up. And she is to be met with the emperor. And, you know, she has anticipated her ascension to the status of warrior poet for quite some time now. And... Wow. All citizens, even her cousin, knows that she is the one who should be named warrior poet. So these thoughts are really what are at the forefront of her thought process right now. So she gets to the front. She gets off her gets off her dinosaur. And
it's hard, I know.
It is. Dinosaurs. This is amazing. And so as she's approaching the emperor, she reaches into her bag and pulls out this sword, holds it aloft to even more cheers from the crowd. I mean, this is quite the procession here. She's walking up and she greets the emperor, presenting the sword. And the emperor says, "You have done such a great service for us. You continue to battle and continue to make right for our civilization. And we greatly appreciate it. And that's why, you know, we really want to..." Does he tell her?
No. So he doesn't tell her now. It's a little bit later. But...
He brings
he talks
her into
of
his
expansion,
tent.
And yeah. he leads her to give her speech to the people. After giving her speech to the people, takes her back in, and they talk a little privately, and they talk about how the Sun Coast is ready to be taken. back. We can retake those towns and cities out there, but you will not go on that, Huatli. I have something else for you. I need you to go and secure the innermost area and protect us while we expand in the outside. You being my strongest, I can't let you run out there and do that. So after a couple months of patrolling and running around, they come across one of their beaches, and there's a pirate ship there. So her and her cousin are charging down. Huatli summons an avalanche kind of dinosaurs where they kind of hold off, just hidden out of view of the pirates. Huatli tells her cousin to run up the coast and to flush them out with some fire. So she sets fire to the crates, and a couple of the pirates go crazy. Some of the dinosaurs flush some others out, and then she finally gets out to the beach to confront them and run them off of her coast. And then
she's greeted with
a hot chain, flaming pulls her chains, cousin yes. off of the dinosaur, and then herself.
Right.
As she looks up, she sees a snarling beast of a man.
A man.
I mean, Minotaur.
A Minotaur man, yes. And this Minotaur is fighting with such callous strength, to quote the story, that it's just, he's effortlessly just trying to, you know, decimate, kill whatever he can. And she's never seen a warrior like him before. And after engaging him in combat pretty unsuccessfully, she notices
her and her cousin,
she notices that these chains hit her in the ankle, as well as they're going after her cousin, and she almost visualizes her defeat, and all of a sudden her spark ignites, and she feels herself being pulled away from this plane, and she appears on what we know as the plane of Kaladesh. But what she sees is golden,
the golden city of Kaladesh.
The golden city of
so
Kaladesh.
She essentially thinks of it as the city of Orozca.
Right.
The lost city.
Right.
Of Ixalan.
Exactly. So she's wondering what the heck is happening, and almost immediately, I mean, she gets a couple of seconds to notice what's going on, or to notice the landscape about her, but she then comes back, and she, you know, reappears back on Ixalan in the same position she was at before. With the sigil above her head, correct. And this is noticed by both the pirate she was fighting, as well as her cousin. And her cousin looks and says, "Oh my gosh, what just happened? You kind of vanished and then just came back." Whereas the pirate says, "What? You are just like me."
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that this pirate, Angarth, is a Minotaur planeswalker as well. But Huatli has no idea what has just happened. So she jumps back on her dinosaur, and her cousin flee, and they head back to the city. Not really sure exactly what happened, but they know they cannot defeat Angarth at this moment.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing. So they go back to the city of Tkatl, if I remember correctly, and she talks to the emperor about this, and the emperor's like, "You've seen Orozca. There is no better truth than what is going to happen now, but I can't give you the title of warrior pro yet. You must adventure out and bring us back the riches of Orozca before I can give you the title of warrior poet."
Right. And she kind of,
and she is like, "Fine, I'll be an adventurer now."
Right. But the way he says it, he doesn't exactly call her the warrior poet, but he uses some verbiage such that she knows that he is essentially saying that she will be the warrior poet.
And if she brings back.
If she brings it back, right. And this fills her with a whole bunch of emotions. You know, she's excited. She's a little terrified. And then she re-encounters her cousin, and he says, "How did the talk with the Emperor go? You know, are you feeling good about this?" And she says, "Well, yes and no." She really doesn't know what to feel, but she does know that she needs to go and find this golden city. Uh-huh. And that final step will grant her status as warrior poet, which is what she's worked so hard to achieve through all her years. So I think that's pretty much where we end the second story. Okay. So Ixalan, craziness.
Man, these transform cards seem so strong.
Yeah.
There's an area called the High and Dry.
The High and Dry. Why don't you elaborate on that for us?
I'm just looking at the map from Ixalan, and in the top right, northern area, above the Spitfire Bastion, is something called High and Dry. It looks like a pirate haven.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to go check out that map pretty soon.
I just emailed it to you.
Ooh, okay. I bet you did.
It shows us where everything is. All right, so getting back on topic, we've got cards to talk about.
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do. All right, I know there's a whole bunch of new transform cards that we want to talk about.
Yeah, so let's talk about the land cycle to start it off. I mean, we're adventurers, adventuring and doing fun stuff.
Yeah, we are.
We want to make our impact left on the land.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I imagine we could just go with color to start off with, right?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. So, starting off in white, we have a one white legendary enchantment called Legion's Landing.
Dun, dun, dun. And
it's a legendary enchantment. What it says, when Legion's Landing enters the battlefield, you get to create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. And when you attack with three or more creatures, transform Legion's Landing into Adanto, the first fort. A legendary land that taps to add one white to your mana pool, or two generic tap a white to tap it and put out a 1/1 white creature token with lifelink.
There you go.
Pretty good, right?
It's like Kjeldurin Outpost, but with vampires.
And lifelink.
And lifelink. Yes. Yeah. Well, so the blue legendary enchantment we have here is Search for Azkanta, which is one in a blue. And at the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. You may put it into your graveyard. Then, if you have seven or more cards in your graveyard, you may transform Search for Azkanta into Azkanta, the Sunken Ruin, which is a legendary land. You can tap, add a blue to your mana pool, or two and a blue, tap, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal a non-creature, non-land card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So, some good digging here. And at the low, low cost of one and a blue, this seems like a very interesting card that definitely could see some standard play.
It could.
I
don't know. I don't think the card advantage is that good, but it could be better than playing some other cards for standard.
Right. The reason why I say standard is the fact that if you're in modern, you know, that two-drop spot is very, very important, whether you want to hold it up to counter something or whether you want to put down a threat. This just seems like a do-nothing card that probably won't get you too far in modern. However, in the realm of EDH, this definitely seems like an extremely powerful card. So yeah. I definitely see this being played in blue decks. Greg, you want to give us the black one?
Yeah. So the black one is Argel's Bloodfast. Generic and black, legendary enchantment. Has the Erebos ability of pay one and black to pay two life and draw a card. So you pay two and two. Two mana and two life. To draw a card. Then, at the beginning of your upkeep, if you have 5 or less life, you may transform Argel's Bloodfest into the Temple of Aklazots. That's a hard word to say.
Yeah, that's a bit of a tongue twister.
It says, tap add a black to your mana pool, or tap sacrifice a creature, and you gain life equal to the sacrifice creature's toughness. This is a really hard card to flip. But when you do flip it, Diamond Valley is really strong.
Yeah.
I have won games at 1 life because I had something like this.
Huh.
Yeah. It was an Obnixilus Oath.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying that you want to use this with a card like Death's Shadow, but that seems like a card that would synergize with this very well. I mean, it's black, so you can run it in decks that... I mean, just going to EDH, you can run it in decks that have things like... oh my gosh, what's that black-green... power and toughness equal to the number of things in graveyards. Master of... or Extinction? Lord of Extinction. This with Lord of Extinction would get you a ton of life. And then maybe, what, Sanguine Bond? And you win? But
that's rude.
It seems pretty rude. Okay, so I'll take us over into red. You have Vance's Blasting Cannons. For 3 and a red, you get at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. If it's a non-land card, you may cast that card this turn. Now, before I continue, Outpost Siege, which was a very dominant red card that gave you card advantage, this is the same exact wording for the cons mode that you would use it for. So 4 drop, and you look at the top card of your library, and until end of turn, you may play that card. It seems very strong. Like, I could see this definitely slotting into a lot of standard decks that are running red. And then let's move on. Whenever you cast your 3rd spell in a turn, in a turn, so your turn or your opponent's turn, you may transform Vance's Blasting Cannons into Spitfire Bastion, which taps to add a red to your mana pool, or you tap 2 and a red, tap it, Spitfire Bastion deals 3 damage to target creature or player. So, extremely powerful. Running it in that red deck, you're going to want that 3 damage later in the game. I mean, just the inevitability of dealing 3 damage to your opponent each turn, that's a clock. That is a serious clock. So, good card. Good card.
So, going to the last legendary enchantment that transforms, we have what is probably the most contended one of them, Growing Rites of Tillamook. It is a 2 generic and green legendary enchantment that says, when it enters the battlefield, you look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may then reveal a creature card from among them and put it to your hand. Then put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not bad. Then it says, at the beginning of your end step, if you control 4 or more creatures, transform it. Pretty easy. So when it's transformed, it's called a Tillamook, Cradle of the Sun.
It's don't you mean Gaia's Cradle?
2.0? Yeah. It does say add a green to your mana pool, then add a green to your mana pool for each creature you control. So this is the same thing as Gaia's Cradle, except it has a condition to make it there. A lot of people are buying these up left and right. I don't think they have play in anything but standard and EDH, but in those two fields, it is kind of busted.
I completely agree with you. And you know from our discussions, I wasn't entirely too hot or even warm on this in the beginning. Because, I mean, yeah, the flip side is a Gaia's Cradle. Flipsidegaming.com. But, you know, it's the conditions that you have to hit for creatures. I mean, in standard, that's, you know, a small percentage of the decks. I mean, especially considering some other cards that we're going to talk about later, you know, control is a very viable type of deck to be playing. So the fact that you have to have that in order to activate this land's ability is already a little bit inhibiting, as well as the fact that it is an enchantment. Now, there isn't that much enchantment removal floating around right now, so that's not too bad.
No.
But it is definitely powerful nonetheless. You're absolutely right. I agree with you. It may not see a place in Modern. I mean, if Modern Elves
I think there's one deck. Modern Elves is the only deck that can run it.
Right. Right, and that even is going to be a stretch because that three drop spot is taken up mainly by lords and other things that'll do things like Elvish Archdruid or
Azuri,
exactly. So it's going to be a stretch to see this do anything but see some play in Standard, as well as I definitely think EDH is where this is going to see its main mode.
Yeah.
So foils are probably going to be insane, All right. Well, that's the cycle of legendary enchantments that flip to lands.
And then you had a flips card that you wanted to talk about. Which one did you want to talk about?
Okay. I wanted to talk about the flip card known as... Oh, my gosh. Where do I start?
I mean, Dowsing Dagger?
There's so
Demotic
many...
Demotic Compass? Primal Amulet? Conqueror's Galleon?
I think I'm going to start with the Dowsing Dagger.
Good choice.
For two mana, you get an artifact equipment. It says when Dowsing Dagger enters the battlefield, target opponent creates 2/0/2 green plant creature tokens with Defender. Okay, you're giving your opponents a couple of creatures. Big whoop. Equip creature gets +2/+1.
I mean, is it a big whoop if they have Growing Rights?
It is. However, whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, you may transform Dowsing Dagger. It has equip costs of 2. And when it flips, it becomes Lost Veil. Tap, add 3 mana of any one color to your mana pool, which provides a whole heck of a lot more mana after the board gets wiped, when your guy's cradle can't provide any mana.
Whoa. New guy's cradle still taps for green if you have no creatures.
Right, but Lost Veil will tap for 3 of any color, regardless of what's on the board.
I didn't say it was bad.
I know. So definitely it's, you know, a 2-drop equipment, which makes it playable. I mean, equip cost of 2. I mean, you're having to work for 4 mana to get this thing on something.
Whoa. Turn 3, you're swinging in with this on a Slither Muse.
Or,
and you don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, or anything else, really. I mean...
Well, no. I mean, you need to have unblockable, and you had to play it on turn 1.
Or it does flying. Deal combat damage, yeah. No, that is true.
I think it fits really nice into that hopeful Slither Muse deck.
Right. And I definitely see this seeing play in EDH. I mean, there's definitely plenty of ways to get in and do combat damage to your opponents. You get a Gilded Lotus after you equip this dagger to someone to do some damage. So I think that's going to be a very, very strong card.
You get a Lotus Veil. It's a little bit better than a Gilded Lotus.
Because
the actual card is Lotus Veil, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a land. Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. All right, so why don't you tackle another one of these flip cards for us?
The card that I'm kind of excited about is Conqueror's Galleon.
Ooh.
Yeah,
why don't you tell
this
us
is
what
a
Conqueror's
four
Galleon
generic
is.
Artifact vehicle. When it attacks, exile it at the end of combat, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. You only have to attack. It does have crew 4 though, and it's a 2/10.
That's pretty big.
It's huge, but when it transforms, it turns into Conqueror's Foothold, a non-legendary land. Says tap, add a colorless to your mana pool. Tap 2, tap it, draw a card, then discard a card. Tap 4, tap it, draw a card. Tap 6, tap it, return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
That's pretty darn strong. That's card. That's not creature. That's not land. That's card.
Card.
Instant sorcery. Woof.
Tarmogoyf. Yeah. No, it's pretty good. I like this card a lot. I think it has a lot of play in EDH. Not very much in Standard. This is definitely that casual niche card. But it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. Speaking of casual niche cards, I want to talk about Primal Amulet.
Did you already order yourself one?
No.
I did.
I probably should. But for 4 mana, you get an artifact that says right off the bat, instants and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 generic less to cast. That's already really good. But you get the added bonus of whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, put a charge counter on Primal Amulet. Then, if there are 4 or more charge counters on it, you may remove these counters and transform it into Primal Wellspring, which is a land, non-legendary, that says tap, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. When that mana is spent to cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell, and you may choose new targets for that copy. I want to get this thing out with swarm intelligence like you wouldn't believe. Because,
well, you know that only gives you 3 copies, right?
Oh, I know. Like, I know. It's not doubling one season for spells. No. Yeah, but the fact that it's Pyromancer's Goggles, but for any color of spell, is amazing.
Yeah, it's like, pretty good.
I can barely see this making some run in standard. I mean, it's a little, you know, gimmicky, but definitely in like EDH, like a Riku deck, or anything that's just trying to go nuts with like Rite of Replication or anything like that.
Or my new deck.
Black
blue spells.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
But like a Torment of Hellfire.
It's, oh God, yeah, no, copying that one, or copying maybe a Cruel Ultimatum or
Villainous
something like
Wealth.
That. Yeah, Genesis Wave. Need we just keep going and going? Anyway.
Oh, Damnable Pact.
There you go. That works. So, Primal Wellspring, very, very, very powerful. I think we're going to actually be able to see this in a standard deck or two. Call me crazy. But I think
somebody's going to try. So, talking about standard cards, I always like to speculate on Planeswalkers making their way into standard. Yes. Now, right now, everybody's kind of talking about Jace, Cunning Illusionist. And I think in those control decks, the dual deck Jace might have play.
Really? Mr. Ingenious Mind Mage.
Yeah, I mean, he's 4 generic, blue, legendary Planeswalker Jace. His +1 is draw a card. Oh, he enters with 5 loyalty counters. His +1 is untap all creatures you control. I mean, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And then at a -9, gain control of up to 3 target creatures. The thing is that I feel like this card just gives you a lot of advantage that you don't ever think about. The ability to just draw a card or untap your creatures. So what creatures you do have allows you to protect yourself. And it just does a lot of things.
I completely agree. I think that this card, I mean, we've seen plenty of Planeswalkers at the 6 drop spot. See, run in standard. Things like Elspeth that pump out the tokens. Things like Chandra that wipe the board and put out tokens. He does a little bit different of stuff, but it definitely does what you want in a blue X control deck. So I think you're right. I think this guy could actually see some standard play.
You got another card you want to talk about?
I would actually like to talk about one of the other Planeswalkers in this set. I think.
Oh, wait, does it start with a V?
I think it starts with a V and ends with a Vraska. It's Vraska, Relic Seeker. For 4. A black and a green, we get a 6 loyalty Planeswalker, Vraska, which has a +2, create a 2/2 black pirate creature token with menace. That's insanely strong. Let's just take a look at this real quick. The first ability, it's a 6 loyalty Planeswalker that becomes an 8. Okay, that is something that needs attention immediately. Otherwise, the ultimate's 10. And so that's really, really close. And as you'll see later, the ultimate is pretty rude, as you like to say. But creating a 2/2 black pirate with menace, that's evasion, that pirate needs to be answered immediately too. So you're getting 2 cards, or a card and a token, that need to be answered immediately for 6 mana. That's kind of what you need out of a Planeswalker that costs that much. I mean, you get just face value, compare Vraska and Jace. You know, you get this, you get Jace that lets you draw a card. I mean, yes, you can untap your creatures, which could potentially be huge, but Vraska gets you a thick body with a 2/2 pirate with menace. Like, that's so good. And then for a -3, you get destroy target artifact, creature, or enchantment.
And you get a treasure token.
And that minus is earth by 3, which is a considerable chunk. But you think you get rid of the biggest threat on the board. That's 6 mana to get rid of a threat as well as put down a card that they need to address immediately, which is very, very strong. And then her ultimate, which is 10. So considering she comes down at 6, means her ultimate is very probable. So -10. Target player's life total becomes 1.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. There's many, 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 many ways to deal 1 damage to an opponent. So I guarantee you, if you get off her ultimate, you will more than likely win the game.
Maybe using a 4-drop instant spell that can kill target creature or planeswalker, and then its controller loses 2 life.
Exactly. Or, you know, man, I really wish I did some research before this. But I know that, let's say you're running a Jun deck, you just shock somebody, they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, black has plenty of life drain abilities, even on creatures that attack. When they attack, your opponent loses a life. So, I think that Vraska will definitely open up the door to a green-black, possibly a green-black X control deck. Maybe we see the resurgence of some Sultai control, which would make me more than excited. Like, you wouldn't even know. I'm getting giddy just thinking about it right now.
You just like the Sultai colors.
I do. And the next card I'm going to talk about is actually what's going to help me solidify that. But was there another card that you wanted to talk about?
Actually, I think this is going to be a really strong aggro card for Standard.
Okay.
And it's a red and a yellow.
Ooh.
Creature dinosaur.
Ooh. That's a good one.
It's called Sky Terror. This is a 2/2 flying menace. And I'm not saying it's just a menace. It really has the ability menace.
Right.
This card, there isn't a lot of flyers out there. And this is the kind of card that allows you to just get in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get to get that 2 damage in it. You get to put on your dowsing dagger on this. You get to do so many different things with this card because it's a 2/2.
Yep.
And it has menace and flying. It allows you to get so far in your late game. And just imagine all the other cards that are going to come out with working with dinosaurs. I mean, there's a 3-drop that I'm going to love here in a moment.
Yep. Yep.
But I just think this card is super strong, really good, easy to play. It almost takes up the same slot as Mantis Riders.
Yep, only it's a little cheaper.
Yeah, and it's a little smaller, but I still think it's great. Anyhow, that was my card.
Now, Greg, this isn't Gatecrash, but could we see some sort of a Boros Aggro deck take advantage of this guy, like maybe a red-white humans deck?
I don't think it'll be a red-white humans deck, but it could be red-white.
Crap, I keep forgetting we're losing Talia and her lieutenant.
Could you imagine, turn 1, you play the land that makes a 1/1. Turn 2, you play this and swing for 1 lifelink. Turn 3, you play your 3-drop haster and flip it. Dude. So that enchantment now becomes a land and you're on 5 mana on turn 4.
I can imagine a lot. You know what else I can imagine? I can imagine turn 1, you drop, and of course, here we go back to what I'm totally into. You drop Soulscar Mage, and then turn 2, you drop Sky Terror, and on turn 3, you've got enough mana to manipulate the board, prowess up a little bit, fly in with your menace, you know, do some little aggro action there.
Yeah.
There's so many possibilities. But going the absolute opposite direction, there is a card that, by this getting back into Standard, is almost the gateway, so to speak, for a control deck or multiple control decks to actually start being viable again, and that card is Spell Pierce. I cannot express how excited I am that Spell Pierce is now a standard legal card. So Spell Pierce is one blue for an instant that says counter target non-creature spell unless its controller pays two. That's instants, that's other sorceries, that's planeswalkers, that's enchantments, that's artifacts, that's anything you can think of that's not a creature. Because control decks will have ways to deal with creatures. But my gosh, Spell Pierce is such a powerful card. I mean, there's a reason why modern decks, I mean, it doesn't run as much now, but there's a reason why modern decks were running this all over the place, you know, consistently. And I know I'm kind of taking a two for one here, but with Duress coming back into standard, like blue-black control, blue-black X control, maybe this is going to help Vraska get, you know, a Sultai control deck going. Like, I think that we could actually see some serious changes in the meta because we've seen so much aggro with Mardu Vehicles and Temur Energy. I mean, that's not really aggro. It's kind of, but
it's more of a mid-range.
It's more of a mid-range deck, yeah. And then, like, Red-White Humans had its time for a while, but I honestly think that control is going to be seeing a resurgence coming up here very soon.
Wait, with not your green-white?
No, not the green-white. I mean, do we want to talk about that now or later?
No.
Okay, we'll go back to that. But anyway, your card that you were talking about.
All right, so my card, I think, is going to have play in more than one format. Possibly even three.
Ooh.
And those three would be standard, modern, an EDH.
Yes.
I'm talking about a red card, which is rare to think of a red card that could be played in all these formats. It is Rampaging Ferocidon. It is two generic and a red creature dinosaur. Menace. Players can't gain life.
That's strong.
Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, Rampaging Ferocidon deals one damage to that creature's controller. Right?
It's like
now,
the opposite
of
Purphoros.
This kind of hurts you sometimes, but this could do a lot of damage.
Oh, absolutely.
But it is a 3-3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For three.
I think this has a lot of play.
A 3-3 menace for three that says players can't gain life seems like a rare card already.
Well, it is a rare.
Well, yeah, but the fact that it gets that benefit of one damage to a creature's controller when they cast a creature, not even cast, when it enters the battlefield. I mean, jeez.
You know, you're not going to see very many people play out that Avengers Endicar when there's like 10 lands out, right? I mean, who wants
right.
to take 11 damage?
Yep. Yep. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Rampaging Ferocidon definitely seems like it's going to see some play in multiple formats.
Yeah, I think it's good enough, too.
Yeah. All right. Oh, my God. So many preview cards here. I mean, were there any other ones that you were dying to talk about?
The only one that I'm also, like, interested in is, flavor text cards.
Okay, well, let me mention one more card, then, before we do that.
No.
Because I don't think we got a chance to talk about Shaper Sanctuary, which is a one-drop. It's a one green enchantment that says whenever a creature you control becomes the target of a spell
yeah.
or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card. This is Leovold's most hated ability as a one-drop enchantment. So, I mean, okay, Leovold does say anything that you control or you is targeted, but Shaper Sanctuary says for one green for the rest of the game until you kill this enchantment, you know, if you spot remove my creature, I get to replace it with a card. If you decide to tap one of my creatures, I get a card. It's so good.
Yeah.
And I see it seeing play in every single format. Every single format. I mean, it's a one drop, so it's super cheap. Doesn't necessarily have to be played on turn one. It's an enchantment, so it's very hard to remove. So Shaper's Sanctuary is definitely going to be my pick for a card that sees a lot of play over all formats moving forward.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I've been up since 6:30.
Oh dear. Oh dear. All right. Flavor text.
So this harkens back to our story talk earlier, and it's Dragon Skull Summit, because I love these check lens. They're really great. Yes. But it said, when the planeswalker Ongrath called dinosaurs dragons, the name stuck in certain pirate circles. I just love the fact that there aren't any dragons here.
Yeah, right? We've seen so many dinosaurs. So many dragons. Yep.
And with that, I'm going to segue us into Iconic Masters. Because if you haven't noticed, there were a lot of dragons in Iconic Masters.
Oh, yes.
I haven't looked at the list of how many, but I think there's somewhere to the tune of like 20 of them.
Yeah, no, there's no shortage of dragons, including the cycle of Kamigawa dragons.
Oh, what about that cycle of praetors from New Phyrexia?
Yep. Oh, man. Cycles. Or
your favorite card.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
Mana Drain.
I cannot believe that they reprinted Mana Drain finally. Like, that was just a card.
What do you think about that Ancestral Vision reprint?
Oh, well, yeah, but before that, I mean, Ancestral Vision's modern playable. Like, that's a card that I could definitely see being reprinted in, like, well, maybe not a dual deck anymore, but either way, let's just conceive this for a second here, what this means. The fact that Mana Drain was only reprinted once in Legends. I mean, it was reprinted online in the digital product for Magic Online for, what was it, Vintage Masters?
Yeah.
But this is a card that is insanely powerful. I mean, we're talking more powerful than Mana Crypt. I mean, that's arguable. But the fact that Wizards is okay with printing even one of these cards that is so iconic in Magic's history, that, you know, I think I've maybe seen a Mana Drain cast in a spell like once in a game.
Really?
Only cast once years and years and years ago. Yes.
I've had it happen to me a few times.
Oh, yeah. It's just one of those cards that I never, never considered owning. But now that they're actually going to reprint it in one of these, you know, master sets, I'm okay with that. The fact that it's a master set, I'm okay with that. But it's amazing. Like, this gives me so much more hope that, you know, these older, more sought-after, much more rare cards are actually getting a chance to get reprinted. I mean, we saw Force of Will get a reprint, which was insane. We're seeing Mana Drain get a reprint, and that's insane. I mean, the fact that those are both counter spells is already just tickling my fancy, but it's...
What about that Cryptic Command reprint?
Oh, the artwork on this new Cryptic Command. I definitely need to get my hands on one of those. It's so good. I mean, is there all these cycles that we've been talking about, is there like any one specific card that just jumps out to you as like, I can't believe they did this, or I need this, like anything like that?
No, actually.
You're like, I knew these were all coming.
No, I none of them surprised me. They all made a lot of sense. Although there was something that I thought was a little bit weird, and this harkens to my earlier talk, Primetime.
Yeah.
Why did they reprint it?
That guy's getting reprints left and right, dude. Like, he needs
but
to get...
But why?
He needs to get unbanned in EDH already. I don't care. Like, he just needs...
So, like I said earlier, there's a finance pick.
Uh-huh.
It's Primetime, because he's about $9 right now.
Oh, after being released, that he's going to get a reprint?
I mean, he's going to drop. I mean, he'll probably be at his lease, let's say $7, right?
Yeah.
And then Iconic Masters comes out in November, and they say, guess what? Primetime's unbanned from EDH.
Dude, this set has way more value and excitement in it, I believe, than any other Master set, including Eternal Masters, that I've seen. I mean, I'm just going to name off a couple cards here. Like, stop me when I go too far, but
You went too far.
Okay, the fact that they're putting channel in here, channel and mana drain. Obviously, you've got Elish.
Whoa! Fireballs in there too.
Wait, what? Say that again.
Fireballs in there too.
The actual fireball card.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Channel fireball.
Channel fireballs definitely.
No. No, that's like a total thing.
No, I see it. I see it. Absolutely. All they need to do is reprint Black Lotus, and you get a turn one win.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, reprint Black Lotus.
You need fork, too.
Do it. Do it. Yeah, no, you can definitely get turn two now. But, okay, you got Avacyn, the original Avacyn. You get Elish Norn. You get Archangel of Thune. You get Primetime. You get
Magus of the Moon.
Vorinclex. Yeah, you get freaking Ancestral Vision.
Ooh, so, one moment before you get too far. Command. I got to ask you, did you read the rules changes?
Yep.
Did you notice what they said about the moon effect?
Yep. Why don't you elaborate on that for us?
So Magus of the Moon says, this is also Blood Moon. They cost the same, except Magus of the Moon is a 2/2. Yep. Two generic and a red.
Yep.
And they say non-basic lands are now mountains. Now, what that used to mean is that Shocklands could enter and deal the 2 damage to you if you wanted to enter untapped.
Yep.
That is no longer true.
Yep.
ETB triggers of non-basic lands while something like this is out on the battlefield do not trigger.
Yep.
So, if it says it enters the battlefield tapped, it won't. It just becomes a mountain.
Yep.
If it comes in with 10 ice counters on it, nope, it doesn't.
Yep.
So Dark Depths might be running this just to sacrifice their Magus.
Yep.
And get a 20/20 indestructible.
All right. I'm going to continue. Kiki Jiki. All right, go. Consecrated Sphinx. Anger of the Gods. Auroch Champion. Bloodghast. Flusterstorm. Thoughtseize. Restoration Angel.
Sarah's Ascendant.
Sarah's Ascendant. What? Lotus Cobra. Like, what is going on? This is insane. Like, this set is so good. And it,
Breathe. It's okay.
There's so much more. I mean, okay, let's go down to the multicolored section. I'm salivating. A Glimpse the Unthinkable. Knight of the Reliquary. Mm-hmm. Aether Vial, Mishra's Bauble. Oh my god. Here we go. Grave Cairns, Grove of the Burn Wills, Horizon Canopy, Nimbus Maze. We were waiting for reprints of these forever, and finally we're getting them all in this one just gigantic.
Oh, like Knight of Souls Betrayal?
Knight of Souls Betrayal. Yeah, yeah. What is going on? Can we get this type of value like in standard?
God
just,
no.
Just reprint all this stuff in standard, please. I'll take the master set. Like this is so good. Mishra's Bauble, by the way, uncommon.
What about that Thrandynama reprint?
Thrandynama reprint. Yep.
Mannequin. Oblivion Stone. Malfagor, Supreme Verdict, Korshak Menace being downgraded to an uncommon.
Look at the fact that mannequin is a pun in and of itself. Like, it's a mannequin, like, da-da-da-da, and it's a mannequin because it provides mana. Like, that's pretty sweet.
Well, that's just a throwback to classic Magic.
Yeah, I think that was Mirage, actually. I think I actually have an old mannequin.
Yes, that was Mirage.
When I saw Star Compass... Like, that was a freaking common. That's so sweet. Like, I'm just waiting for them to find a set to reprint all the eggs. You know, like Chromatic Star, Chromatic Sphere.
That will never happen.
Those are just... Well, look at Mana Drain, bro! Come on! Never is a long time, okay? And Channel and Mana Drain getting released in the same set that you know is going to be drafted... At some point, like, come on. And Lord of the Pit, like, flavor, you know, finance be damned, like, Lord of the Pit, so sick, so good. Question, shot out of a cannon, would you rather have a Lord of the Pit or an Abyssal Persecutor on your side?
Hmm. Probably Lord of the Pit.
Lord of the Pit? Okay. I can see that. I can see the value in that. Did you want to talk about any of the rarity shifts while we're on this?
There's a couple interesting ones. A couple legendaries being downshifted. Bladewing the Risen, Roisin Meanderer. But not really.
Okay.
Dragon Tempest got downgraded.
It did. It's a very, very good card, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is now considered an uncommon. There's such a spread in this set too. I mean, you get cards like Foul Tongue Invocation, Seeker of the Way that are from as recent as the Cons block. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the way back to Legends. I mean, drop the mic, Wizards. You guys did a great job on this set. Like, this is so good. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. And I think also the fact that they did this pre-release at HasCon without releasing any spoilers is just fueling the fire of excitement for this. Like, do this more, please. I think that releasing spoilers is fun. Spoiler cards are great. But doing this for like a master set is just, it's so exciting. I know we're not getting...
I think this was a test for them. And I think it went over really well.
Yeah. And I think that by doing this with the master sets, you know, you're not really inhibiting deck building for standard. But yeah, no, this was super cool. And release this to stores. You know, don't just do this at HasCon. If you actually release this stuff to stores and let them do this, and then all of a sudden let players go on Twitter, go online and release stuff. Maybe you know, Joe Schmo Magic player playing at this card shop opens himself up an Underground Sea because the reserve list is no more. I know, but whatever. You know, maybe they open up something that's ridiculously powerful from an old set, and they get to be the one to let everybody know, and their tweet gets retweeted, you know, 56 bajillion times. But this is so cool. And another thing that I really like about this, and obviously everyone's saying the reserve list is not going to get touched, blah blah blah, but I'm curious to see what happens to the price of a card like Mana Drain with one reprint, you know. And I'm not saying that they're going to go and reprint everything. But if investors can see that Mana Drain holds its price value after being reprinted once, I'm just saying, sky's the limit. You can
technically
make...
twice. You are forgetting about the Judge program.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to talk about the online one. But no. Okay. All right. But please, Wizards, just... take this into consideration, even if it's just a one-time reprint. I mean, you have the nostalgic value of all the older cards from the older sets. I mean, look at Shivan Dragon. The newest Shivan Dragons are pennies, but the Shivan Dragons from like Revised on earlier, those are, you know, I say way more, but it's a couple bucks more. But you know, like 20 cents.
I don't know what you're talking about. A couple bucks more. Revised are 10.
There you go.
Unlimited are 20.
There is an
beta is a couple hundred, and
value.
Alphas are around 200 to 300.
Boom. All I'm saying is, if you were to reprint yourself a set of dual lands in one master set, not in standard, just in a master set, then all of a sudden you would have all these lands, Legacy would
now
be a viable format again, and you would have the collective nostalgic ability of these older cards to hold their value.
Some might say this is a test.
Yep. I agree. I thought masterpieces were a test, to be perfectly frank. I thought that by them doing masterpieces of cards, they were going to see if they, in fact, decrease the value of extremely rare and sought after cards like these fetch lands that we had. And guess what it did? It made them more
higher.
Sought after.
Yeah. I mean, look at Crucible Worlds right now.
Can you imagine if they were to reprint a set of these duels during a master set and then have the originals from Alpha Beta Unlimited revised just get a boost because of
Yeah.
that? Like, come on, you've got to open your eyes and see what's
I
in front of
also
you.
feel like that's something that they need to focus on with their idea of the team constructed events too. Because by having the reserve lists on dual lands, it's really limiting that play.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. You've got such an amazing format in Legacy. Please open your eyes and look at this. It's so much fun. It's such a big part of Magic's history. And you're essentially just saying, oh, well, we don't care about the Crusades.
Whoa, whoa,
We
whoa.
don't care
Remember,
about.
they've still got 25 coming out next year.
Dude, I'm just saying, as long as they use the title reserved list, we're not seeing any of those cards. They need to just suck it up and realize that these.
Maybe with the 25th year of Magic, they are going to come out and say, we have disbanded the reserve list.
Freaking A. I sure hope so, because the thought of playing Legacy, it stimulates my want to actually.
Anyhow, we've gotten off caught off topic.
Again, as we always do. So, okay, we're nearing the end of the episode here, and one of the other things that we wanted to do is we had another little game that we have planned. We could just call these games "Test Greg's Knowledge" because that's kind of what we've been doing here. I mean, this isn't Jeopardy like we did before. This is just a straight up trivia quiz that I'm going to be giving Greg. Now, Greg,
Give me some brain pickers.
what format would you say you play more than any other format of Magic?
It's definitely EDH.
Okay, so what I've done here is I have written down six cards. And what I want from you is the original commander printing of each of these cards. Now,
Okay.
this isn't going to be, we're not going to have total points or anything like that, but what I'm going to ask you is I'm going to ask what year commander set these were from. And if you give me that,
Heck, I might even give you the commander deck.
I was about to say, if you can give me the commander deck, that's icing on the cake. So, you know what? Why don't we do that? Let's keep points here. If you get the year of the commander sets correct, that's 1 point. If you get the actual commander deck, that's 2 points.
All right,
And
we'll see.
we'll see how we do. So there's six total cards here. All right. We're going to start off easy and work our way up the ladder. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. First card, Charnel Horde Worm.
That would have been.
Which year?
I want to say 2012, and it would be the select card deck with Shattergang Brothers and Prosh.
You got it correct. You know what? I'm going to give you full credit for that, but it was actually 2013 was the year of those
Okay.
commander decks. But you get 3 points for that. It was from the Prosh deck. Absolutely correct. Okay.
I actually just bought that deck in Japanese because I wanted to get the Proving Grounds. Proving Grounds? No.
No, Primal Vigor.
Primal Vigor, because you know that card's
Ooh.
really good.
Yeah, it is. So, real quick question, sidebar. I know we get tangential here from time to time. There's a Japanese Atraxa deck at one of my local game stores. Should I go pick that up?
I don't think the Japanese multiplier is as good as it used to be.
Okay. Even for
With
Atraxa?
time it might,
Okay.
but I just don't think there's any outside of EDH play, and outside of EDH is where those numbers are. EDH, it's people look for German, locally, Russian, something that's more flavorfully cool, whereas the Japanese language, no offense, people just don't find it cool in look anymore.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Number two, Death by Dragons.
I want to say that was 2014 and in the Ready deck.
That is incorrect. That was the original Commander set, the Riku of Twin Reflections deck.
Oh, gosh. Okay. That, what was the release on that, though?
The year? 2011.
Okay. There was no 2012. That's right.
Right, yeah. They skipped a year, and then they decided to do them every year after that.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Moving on. Scavenging Ooze.
Scoos? I'm going to have to go 2011. It was in the Vorosh deck.
What was the progenitor of that deck? Oh, I guess there were all three of them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Vorosh, Mimeoplasm, and... I can't remember the third one. Was it in that deck? Was I wrong?
Mimeoplasm is incorrect, but it is from 2011, so you will get 1 point for that. It was from the Gave Guru of Spore set.
Oh, yeah, that deck's busted.
That deck was pretty ridiculous, yeah. Aura Shards and Gave. I hate that. I absolutely hate that.
You know those are $13 a pop, right? The Aura Shards?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. So
not doing too well.
That's okay. That's okay. This is tough.
Number four.
Much tougher than the other one. Okay. Limdol's Vault.
Oh. Pretty sure that is in the Nekazar, the Mindraiser deck.
That was actually... You got the year correct. It was 2013, but it was from Alloro. So you get 1 point for that one.
Gosh, why would they put it there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you know why they put it there? Alloro gains life.
There you go, because you pay that life and then you get it back. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next one. Gahiji, Honored One.
Oh, well, that was one of the commanders for the Maroth of the Will deck.
You got it. Yep.
2014? No. That was alongside everything else in 2011. Wasn't it?
Think about the color combination. Think about the color combination.
It was Naya. Oh, not enemies. 2013.
There you go. There you go. We'll give you 3 points for that one. Okay, last one. Mother of Runes.
Noah's printing the Nahiri deck, but I'm not sure if it was printed earlier.
Wait, Nahiri?
Zedru deck.
You got the year, but it was printed in the Kalia deck.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Okay. Well, you only missed one. You only missed the one.
Technically, kind of. I had a lot of the years right. Okay.
Six. Nine. You got 9 total points. So good job on your inaugural commander card identification. If you hadn't noticed, I only had time to look them up from 2011 and 2013. And they were the oldest ones. But if there was anybody who knew their commander knowledge, I was sure it was you. So
I'm pretty good with those. Yeah.
Yeah. No, good job on that. All right. Well, so at this point, I want to open it up. Was there anything outside of Magic that you've been doing that's been kind of interesting or fun or exciting?
As of lately, I've been working out with my buddy, going biking more.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, you are infatuated with Destiny 2.
That's what I was just going to talk about. Oh my God. I'm already level 20 with a Warlock. And
jeez.
I love that game. I mean, I played Destiny 1, you know, all the way through the last expansion. And then now that I'm actually starting at the very beginning, because I caught up kind of late, but now that I'm starting from the beginning, I'm going like full bore, besides the fact that I'm still on leave, on paternity leave. So I have plenty of time to dive into that.
I have been playing Persona 4. That's what I've been playing recently.
Oh, okay. So preceding Persona 5. Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay.
Might be picking up Persona 5. So.
Okay. Nice. Excellent. Well, if any of you out there are Destiny 2 players, you know, check me out. Beta Sean on the PlayStation Network. Unfortunately, I don't play Xbox, but...
I don't know if that's an unfortunate thing.
No, I agree. I agree. I gotta
Sorry, guys. I'm not trying to alienate you.
I gotta throw those Xbox players a bone every now and again.
I do have an Xbox, an Xbox 360, but game titles past that, I kind of lean towards Sony.
Yep.
Sony has the better next-gen titles right now.
Dude, you should totally get Destiny. Just saying.
I mean, if anybody wants to buy it for me.
You know, well, we don't... No, we're not even going to tease. No. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, after all that, Greg, where can we find you?
Nowhere. No, you can find me at noobslasher2003 on Twitter. That is NOOBSLASHER.
Yep. Exactly. And I am at MTG_Sean. We are at The Win Condition on Twitter. Just a reminder, the show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com. Make sure to head over there and pre-order anything Ixalan related or Iconic Masters related that your heart desires. Any order of $10 or more, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to get 10% off your order and contribute to future show giveaways. You can check out our outdated Twitch video thing at twitch.tv/thewincondition, where we heavily misplay Gate to the Afterlife. You can check us out. We have an Instagram at Team Win Condition. Twitch.tv/TeamWinCondition. And our email is at thewincondition@gmail.com. We are on MTGcast, Shout Engine, we're on SoundCloud, and we are on iTunes. And if you feel like leaving us a review, go ahead. You know, we appreciate it. Go ahead and contact us with any questions, comments, concerns, interests, hobbies, social security numbers, credit card numbers that you want. We're more than happy to take those. So with all that being said, Greg, thank you again.
Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.